in Constantinople, Radu said, trying to hide how you affected me, and trying desperately not to be affected. Cyprian laughed. I am glad you suffered too. Do you know how often I tried teasing some sort of reaction out of you? That night in the forge, Cyprian slid his hand along Radu's waist, letting it rest where Radu's hip bone jutted out. I would have leapt over the table at the slightest indication from you. There is a reason I kept the table between us. I was trying so hard not to love you. Cyprian nodded, his face still against Radu's neck. It was an impossible situation. Someday they would talk more about it. They had time. Right now, what they needed was closeness. I always feared that this, Radu said, kissing Cyprian's forehead, was an impossible situation. Cyprian scooted back, taking Radu's face in his hands and peering at him in the dark. Radu could just make out the details of his expression. Cyprian looked worried. Is it for you? Orthodoxy is my religion, the same way my father is my father. Distantly, and only because I was born to it. In Constantinople, I saw too much damage done by people wielding the will of God like a weapon. But in Islam, can you? Radu smiled. He had agonized over these things enough. I believe that God is merciful and great and beyond our comprehension. And Nazira always told me she feels closest to God when she feels love. I think she is right. In a way, love is the highest expression of faith in ourselves, in others, in the world. I can expand my faith to allow myself happiness in this life and trust in God's love and mercy after this life. He paused. Though, I would like to follow as many rules as I can. The structure of Islam is important to me. It has been a scaffold of protection and comfort. Teasingly, Cyprian lowered his hand, tracing his way down Radu's abdomen, but stopping just shy of where Radu would have liked him to continue toward. So what you are saying is that we need to be married very soon, Cyprian said, his lips right against Radu's ear. Yes, Radu gasped. Very, very soon. His marriage to Nazira was legal. Her marriage to Fatima was spiritual, but even more binding. Radu would do the same with Cyprian. Cyprian moved his hand back up, resting it over Radu's heart. It was both a relief and a disappointment. But as Cyprian moved closer, and they breathed together, drifting towards sleep, Radu knew they had time to explore desire. There was no fear or desperation here. Only happiness and the incredible grace of loving and being loved. All his life, it was the only thing he had ever truly wanted. He had found it in Islam. He had found it in his connection with Nazira. And now he had found the fullest form of it here. He rested his head on Cyprian's chest, falling asleep to the music of the heart that beat with everything Radu needed in this life. 37. Hunidwara. 2 weeks into her captivity, Lada was fairly certain Matthias was poisoning her. She could barely eat what they gave her. As often as not, she threw it up. Though why he was choosing poison, she did not know. No, she did. It was a coward's way out. She only wished he would increase the dosage and finish her off, instead of this lingering torment. Perhaps it was God's punishment. She had given him the tools to take the throne, and he had poisoned the sickly child prince to get there. Now she would die the same way. Though if God were interested in punishing her, she had a great many sins worse than enabling Matthias. Had she reached too far, killed too many, disregarded the advice of those who truly cared about her? Sometimes she felt them, here, with her. Nikolai in particular. He said nothing, but when she awoke from her dreams of the bloody banquet, when she had killed all the Dinesh boyars and begun the journey that led to this cell, she could only remember the way he had looked at her, the way he had watched. He had known, even then, and he had warned her. Radu had warned her too. Everyone had warned her, and she had defied them. And she had won. And now, she was here. All her rage had bled away, leaving her perpetually cold. She followed the small patch of sun that made it through to the floor. It was her only companion. She tried to move as much as she could, afraid of losing her strength and fighting ability. But a heavy lethargy of both body and soul pulled at her. The 18th morning she lay on the floor, curled into a ball to fit as much of her body in the square of sunlight as was possible.
"Child, why are you in your underclothes?" Varna exclaimed.
Larda stood and rushed to the door. Varna stared back at her through the hole.
"You are alive!"
Larda grabbed the bars. She had lost track of her nurse when they had been ambushed in the throne room. She had not allowed herself to dwell on that, but her relief at seeing Varna's wrinkled and worn face was almost overwhelming. Now that she knew Varna was not dead, she felt how deeply that death would have wounded her. She took a deep breath, pushing her fingers over her eyes, then reaching back to the window. Varna put her hands over Larda's.
"I am alive, yes. They try to get information from me, but I am an old woman who knows nothing and can barely speak Valahian, much less understand Hungarian. All I know how to do is so. I have certainly never been privy to any of your plans."
Larda grinned, relieved that at least Varna was doing well in captivity.
"And now?" "Now, at the insistence of Mara Brankovic, who has written several times, I have finally been permitted to bring you your food. Matthias says you are not eating much."
"He is poisoning me." Varna peered down at whatever she carried.
"I will eat some of it. Then we can know for certain."
Larda shook her head.
"No reason for us both to die. Larda, my child, I have been with you since you were born, and I do not want to live after you die."
She leaned against the door and picked at Larda's food.
"Tastes fine," she said.
Larda wrinkled her nose in disgust.
"Do you have any weapons? Those will serve me far better than food, poisoned or otherwise." "They check me very thoroughly. Actually, it is the most interested any man has been in my body for nearly 20 years now. I invited him back to my chambers, but he did not seem to understand."
Larda laughed, unable to help it. She was more profoundly grateful for Varna, here in the midst of her despair, than she had thought possible. She would even consent to having her hair combed, if such a thing were possible, through the door. Varna glanced casually to the side.
"Good. The guard does not speak Valahian. He did not so much as flinch at my filthy imprecations."
She began passing the food to Larda.
"I feel fine. I will let you know immediately if I die, though."
Varna stopped, staring into the dim cell.
"What the devil is that?"
Larda followed Juana's gaze to the tableau she had built along the edge of her cot.
"Oh, the guards think it is funny to bring them to me. They say it will remind me of home and keep me from getting too sad."
Several rats had been impaled on tiny stakes and pinned into grotesque positions. The stakes, unfortunately, were too small and flimsy to serve any practical purpose.
"They are trying to upset me, so I display them instead."
Varna wrinkled her nose in disgust.
"Pass them here. I will get rid of them."
Larda leaned against the door to rest. She needed to move more, to be active even in these confined conditions.
"I will keep them. I can show no weakness to these worms. But enough about myself. Tell me what is happening out there." "You will not like it."
"Tell me."
"Radu is in Turgaviste. He has put Aron Dinesh on the throne. Larda's jaw ached, but she could not unclench it. Our men in the mountains? We hear nothing of them, which is good. It means they have not been found, or betrayed us. And what are the rest of Europe? How do they respond to Matthias's bold move in taking me prisoner? No one knows.
Larda sighed.
She had hoped that Mara would tell Radu, or someone who would spread the news. But Mara was Mahmed's, and would do what she was told, because that was how she stayed free and powerful. How different the world would be if only merit and skill were rewarded, if only ambition created results. Instead, it was a tangled mess of threads. Larda had tried so hard to stay out of that web, to owe her power to no one, but the closer she got to transcending the strands that had bound her throughout her whole life, the more the web tightened around her. Wana continued. As far as everyone else knows, you were still hiding in the mountains, or underneath the beds of small children who refuse to obey their parents. But at least Matthias cannot kill you, and risk the ire of your fan, the Pope. Larda pushed her head against the wood door, wishing the planks would part and allow her through. Does the Pope know where I am? Is there help there? No. He thinks you are hiding as well. How do you know all this? Have you taken a lover here? Are you playing spy? Larda could not imagine such a thing, but then again, Wana was always surprising her. Wana laughed, a deep, guttural burst like Bogdan's. Larda was hit anew with longing to be anywhere but here. To be back in the mountains with Bogdan. At least she had made him stay there. He would have died otherwise. She clutched the locket, which they had let her keep. It comforted her, knowing Valahia was waiting. Bogdan was waiting. Comforted and drove her mad, in equal measures. What good was she to anyone here? I did not find any of this out myself. Wana shifted to the side, cocking her head subtly to the left. Larda leaned against the opening and looked at where a man was sweeping the floor under the dispassionate gaze of a guard. She did not spend much time looking out the window, feeling it made her appear weak, but she should have paid more attention to who was out there. Unlike most people, Larda had trained herself to notice that bland, blank face. Stefan. He began working here 2 weeks before you were captured. They suspect nothing. I should go now, Wana said with a smile. You hold tight. She reached a hand through the opening and rested one dry palm against Larda's cheek. Larda watched her leave, careful to pay no further attention to Stefan. For the first time since she had been locked up, hope fluttered in her chest. It was as small and fragile as the rodents twisted in macabre death by her bed. 38. Turgu Viste. While Radu was grateful for Cyprian's help, having him sit in on meetings was distracting. Pleasantly so, but distracting nonetheless. With all the upheaval, no one had questioned Cyprian's presence. Radu had merely introduced him as a close friend and advisor. Radu's men had accepted Cyprian without question, and Aron and Andre were too busy scheming to wonder where he had come from. Fortunately, the meetings were conducted in Turkish. Radu's men did not speak Valahian, and Aron and Andre were fluent in Turkish.
Radu?
Radu tore his eyes from the teasing smile on Cyprian's lips.
What?
Aron frowned.
I said, how many do you think we should plan on for the celebration?
Radu leaned back in his chair, struggling to keep his expression neutral.
I thought we agreed paying for that much food and drink, as well as furnishing all the guest rooms in the castle, was not the best use of resources right now.
We agreed on nothing, Andre said. You said we need to get the boyars on our side. How else can we prove to them that we are in control?
Radu strained to keep the incredulity he felt off his face. The best way we can show them the country is under control is to actually get the country under control. My men are still in the mountains hunting down Larda's forces. We have heard no word of her or her location for weeks, meaning any gathering of boyars is inherently risky. It is not like her to give us this much time to fortify. It makes me wonder what she has planned.
Perhaps she is dead, Andre said.
She is not dead, Radu snapped.
How can you be sure?
He was not sure, or at least there was no way for him to be sure. But he could not imagine that Larda would die alone, and in secret, or that she could be dead and he would not somehow know. Surely her death would be marked by something. A comet, a great hole opening in the earth, a tempest, a flood, a fire. A force such as Larda could not depart this world without leaving one last mark. Radu rubbed his forehead.
Regardless, until we discover news of her, we must operate as though an attack is imminent. And if we want to avoid mass starvation in the coming year, we need to plant and rehabilitate the fields as soon as possible. People have started returning to the villages. Any resources not needed for protection should go toward rebuilding.
Aron smoothed his vest.
I think my brother is right. A show of strength is called for. Thus the forces in the mountains hunting down enemies, Cyprian muttered in Greek.
Radu coughed to cover up his answering laugh.
This is the way things are done, Aron said. It is what my father would have done.
Your father is dead, as are many of the boyars. Radu did not mean for it to be harsh, but Aron flinched.
Andre sat straighter, a protective glare sharpening his eyes. Radu held up his hands in placation.
What I am saying is, my sister has pushed things so far past what they were, we will have to be very careful in how we put them back together. If you had a horse that got free and lived wild for a year, you would not immediately saddle it and expect to safely ride. You would bring it back, feed it, make it feel safe, and remind it why you are a good master.
Larda destroyed all the stables. We need to bring everything back to its place before we can expect a return to normalcy.
You are the one who told us we need to act like things are normal in order for them to be so.
Aron again smoothed his vest, fixing a button that never seemed to stay fastened.
I am diverting funds for the celebration. I will repay the Sultan by adding boys to the Yanacheri tribute. As Vivode of Valahia, I do not need your permission.
He held Radu's gaze firmly.
For anything, he added.
Radu opened his mouth to argue, then closed it and pasted a smile in place.
Whatever you feel is best. I will release the funds designated to you, and then continue my work as directed by the Sultan. Please, let me know if you require anything further.
Radu stood, bowed stiffly, and walked from the room. He was followed by Kirill, his other lead men, and Cyprian.
Aron is a fool, Cyprian said with a sigh.
Radu did not disagree, and it was disheartening.
I had hoped he would do better. He is pretending like he simply inherited the throne from his father.
Everything is different, though. We cannot continue on as things were, and I do not think we should. As much as Radu had loved training with the Yanacheris and valued the men he led, he also thought trading more Valahian youth in order to throw parties was not the best footing for Aron to start on.
How many people have come back to the city? Radu asked Kirill.
100, perhaps. A few more come every day. But it is a trickle, not a flood.
Radu shook his head.
And Aron wants to celebrate. We cannot even be sure that some of the citizens are not working with Larda. She may be reviled by the boyars, but we should not underestimate how much she did for the peasants of this country. We will have to work hard to earn their support, or even just their complacency.
Kirill bid them farewell, and Radu and Cyprian walked alone toward their rooms.
Do you think Arone is up to the task? Cyprian asked, as they joined Nazira and Fatima.
I hope so.
Radu could not help the fear that the cycle of bloodshed over the throne of Valahia would continue indefinitely.
Nothing ever changed.
No, some things changed. Radu looked at his hand, his fingers laced with Cyprian's. It did not seem possible that those were his fingers, that this was his life. How could something so simple as holding hands with another person feel like a miracle?
As though sensing his thoughts, Cyprian lifted their hands and put his lips against the back of Radu's hand, then rested his cheek there.
Nazira frowned as she listened to Radu's report of the situation, not looking up from playing with Fatima's hair. Fatima lay on the floor with her head in Nazira's lap. Cyprian and Radu were across from them in the sitting room that connected their two bedrooms. For the first time in his life, the castle felt like home, not because of the place, but because of the people.
I cannot believe he thinks a party is the solution. I have hinted very strongly he should focus on preparing marriage offers, Nazira sighed. He only asks my advice on clothing styles.
You should have heard him, Cyprian said. He offers the boyars a dinner party, as evidence of his right to be prince.
Nazira lifted her eyes to the ceiling in exasperation. I do not think he is suited to this. He is not the type of leader capable of transitioning a country in so much turmoil.
He is the only real choice.
Radu closed his eyes, imagining them all back at home in Edirna. Or better yet, the country estate where Nazira and Fatima usually lived. It felt within grasp. He and Cyprian would marry soon, in the same way Fatima and Nazira had. And then, they would simply be. And it would be enough. More than enough.
There is another heir far more suited to this work, Nazira said.
Andre worries me as well. I do not think...
Not him.
The nagging tone of Nazira's voice forced Radu's eyes open. She was giving him a look full of meaning.
The Draculesh line has just as much claim to the throne.
Radu recoiled. I do not want this throne.
I never have.
Which is why you are the right person.
Nazira's gaze was intense with the confident assurance that carried her through life.
Not because you feel like it is owed you. You would take the throne as a true servant to your people, the prince they both desperately need and deserve, not a violent warlord, and not a spineless noble. An actual prince.
Radu shrugged, but his smile was a challenge to her sentiments.
Alas. The position has already been filled. I will do what I can for him and for Valahia. And then we are going home.
He squeezed Cyprian's hand and felt the warm rush of reassurance as Cyprian squeezed back.
All of us. Permanently.
Nazira's full lips drew down at the corners.
Your people deserve better than our own.
You are my people. My people are the three people in this room with me right now.
Only Fatima looked pleased by the sentiment. Nazira's frown did not lift, and Cyprian made a noise in his chest that sounded unsure.
We will get to Larda before anyone else does. We will send her back to the Empire where she will spend the rest of her days in a prison. And then Arone can find his way as prince. Without me.
Radu spoke with all the authority and confidence he did not feel, willing it to be true. He did not want to have to shoulder the burden of Valahia. Let it take care of itself, as it had never taken care of him. 39. Hunedwara. Larda sat on the floor, her back to the door. The cell that had been cold and dank was now oppressively warm and humid as spring shifted into summer.
I think I am dying.
Nonsense, Wana chided from the other side.
she rapped her knuckles against the wood. You are not allowed to die. Besides, I have taken one of the cooks as a lover.
You what?
Larda sat up straighter.
The knights here are long, and it seemed an easy way to make certain your food was safe. He is definitely not poisoning you. First, because no one has told him to, and second, because if you died, I would have no reason to stay here. Poor fool adores me.
Larda did not know whether to laugh or to cut off her ears in an effort to remove the information she had just received. Juana continued, as though none of this was odd.
Now to be quick. Stefan says there are always at least 5 guards. The key is kept upstairs in a locked room that also has several guards. He can probably kill the guards on this floor, but he is not certain he can get the key, and then come down here and kill them all without raising an alarm. That would make it impossible for you to slip away once the door is opened.
It was still amazing to Larda that the greatest assassin she had ever known had been working as a cleaner for more than 3 months. He had made himself a fixture of the castle. No one noticed him. He could do whatever he needed to, so long as he kept up his duties. She would never look at her own castle servants the same, assuming she ever got a castle again. Larda scratched her head, then stared at her filthy fingernails.
So I need to figure out a way to get the guards to open the door themselves, while Stefan is here. And he cleans this block only once a week.
Larda wrinkled her nose at the ever-present miasma.
I am aware. Unfortunately, ever since I killed 3 guards with my bare hands, they have not been willing to open the door.
Larda had to pass her chamber pot out through the small hole in the door. That was also how she got water for drinking and washing. Food, which after 3 eternal months still almost always made her throw up, and anything else they saw fit to send her. Usually more rats. She did not have the energy to bother displaying them any more.
You will think of something. When you do, we will be ready. What if this is it? What if I never get out? I will disappear just as he planned, and he will win. Mahmed will win. All the men will win. I cannot bear it, Juana. Who am I speaking to?
Juana reached a hand through the hole and blindly groped for Larda's head. She found it, tangling her fingers in Larda's hair.
It feels like my Larda, but it certainly does not sound like her. Will you really let this king, with his fine clothes and his oiled beard and his gilded lies, get the best of you? You are a dragon.
Larda nodded, but here in this sweltering cell, far from her people and her land, she did not feel like a dragon. For the first time in a long time, she felt like a girl. It terrified her, because there was nothing in the world more vulnerable to be than a girl. These past 3 months, Larda had spoken only to Juana, who was permitted to visit her once a day for a few minutes. She suspected Mara was behind that kindness. For a while she had wondered if Mahmed would send for her, but she had tried to kill him, and if he transported her all the way to Constantinople, word would get out, ruining Matthias's goal of having her fade from Europe's consciousness. So when Matthias came to visit her the next day, Larda was happier to speak with him than she ought to have been.
"It pains me to see you like this," he said.
"Let me out, and I will show you what pain is."
Matthias laughed.
"You are very bad at negotiating, but it is no wonder that my father preferred you over me. You speak the same language. Did you know he wanted me to marry you?"
"Yes, I knew."
"You did?"
A flicker of confusion passed over his face. Larda assumed it was because he could not fathom any woman passing on the opportunity to wed him. She yawned, stretching her arms over her head.
"I felt it would be disrespectful to your father to marry his son and then murder my husband in his sleep, though I probably would have murdered you while you were awake, for the satisfaction of watching the look on your face as my knife cut your soul free from your loathsome body."
Matthias leaned closer, peering through the hole.
"Why do you make your life so much more difficult than it has to be? You could have been in a house, with servants, with comforts. I would have taken excellent care of you out of respect for what you have accomplished. I am not a fool. I know you have done great things. But you made so many enemies along the way. Does it not trouble you that I have held you these last 3 months, and no one has come looking for you? No one has inquired about your location. He twisted his face in mock sympathy. No one cares that you are gone. You have been replaced on your throne without fanfare or struggle. You may have sent the Ottomans out of your land, but this is your reward. He sighed as though feeling actual pity for her. I cannot kill you. I do not know if I want to, but even if I did, it would put me at odds with those who admire you. Besides, it is much easier to simply keep you, to let you stay here until everyone has forgotten you, until your only legacy are the lurid woodcuts and terrifying nighttime stories of the Saxons. You will fade into a monster, a myth, and when that happens, I will be kind. When everything you accomplished has disappeared, and it will not take long, then I will take you out of this cell, and I will let you die. He paused, considering. Or I may let you live. I do not think it matters much, either way. The world was never going to permit you to continue. You should have made someone a repulsive wife, had an heir or two, and lived out your life in quiet misery. Larda lifted an eyebrow coldly. Your father would be ashamed of you. Matthias nodded without emotion. He probably would. I will have to live with that. And I will live. I have my crown. I will rule my people, and my reign will be long and fair and touched with glory. And you will be less than a notation in the triumphant history of my life. Who knows? Maybe you will have a few lines in the Sultan's history as well. You can always hope. Larda wanted to find words that would do as much damage as she knew her fists could. She wanted to cut this small man to his very core. But she knew that even though she was better, smarter, stronger, even though she had already done more for Europe than he ever would, even though she had worked and fought harder than he was capable of, he was probably right. He would be rewarded and remembered and respected. He might even merit some of that, eventually. We could have done great things together, Larda said. If you had but a portion of your father's courage, we could have changed the face of Europe forever. But only one of us wants things to change. How they are right now suits my people's needs. And be honest, my Pearl, did you really think the world would change enough to accept a woman as prince? Matthias searched her face for an answer, genuinely curious. Then, with a shrug, he turned. Larda watched the space go dark as Matthias walked out of view. She knew perfectly well how to be a girl. She was a girl. People seem to forget that, or assume she wanted to be something else because of her choices. Hearing Matthias lay out her future in such bleak terms might have sent her into a rage in the past. But she was older than she had been when she got here. She was weary. She was ready. The next time the cruel guard came by with a rodent, Larda smiled at him. She opened her eyes wide and smiled through her long, tangled hair. "I want bigger animals," she said. "Rats are not satisfying. Bring me rabbits, larger animals, men, if you have any to spare." His look of gleeful horror confirmed to Larda that he would do as asked, if only to have a new account of her depravity to trade like currency among the other soldiers. She smiled bigger. Larda lay in a pool of blood, her skin pale, her eyes closed. The blood was cold and congealed, an inelegantly written story of the end of her life spilled out onto stone floors.
"Devil take her," a guard at the door muttered. "Hey, come look at this. Oh, God protect us. What a mess. Hey, you, stay here. You have quite the clean-up job ahead of you tonight. Yosef, go get the keys."
Should I send word to the king? No, not yet. We should check on her. Make sure she is dead. Then move her out quietly so no one notices. After that, we can figure out what to tell him. I better not get in trouble for this. I liked this job, the second guard said. Not me. Look at those animals. She was a monster. Lucifer, his dad's unhappy in his flames tonight to get such a soul for hell.
After a few minutes, the door opened and two pairs of booted feet shuffled into the room.
God save us, the smell!
A boot nudged Larda's side. Then her wrist was lifted, held gingerly between two fingers as though the guard was worried her death, or perhaps just the smell, was contagious.
Where is the wound? Her wrists are not cut.
Larda twisted her hand, grabbing the guard's wrist. She yanked him to the floor. A cry went up, but was cut short with the swift application of Stefan's blade. Larda's hands around the first guard's throat prevented him from shouting, and Stefan's blade silenced the other one. What took you so long? Larda stood, shaking out her arms and legs to restore circulation. The animal blood made her dress sticky and stiff, but she had no replacements and no time to change. Stefan wiped his knife on the tunic of one of the dead guards. He had slipped in after them.
I had to kill the ones in the hallway first.
He held out a length of brown cloth, and Larda wrapped it around herself like a shawl. It hid most of the blood. She hesitated at the threshold and then stepped into the hallway. It felt like a much bigger distance than it was.
Where is Juana? She was supposed to discover my body. I have been lying on the floor for hours.
Stefan shook his head.
I do not know.
We agreed that this was the day.
She does not always come when she is scheduled.
We cannot leave without her. We will go to the kitchens and...
Larda.
We do not have time.
Larda tried to hurry down the hall. She wanted to feel triumphant, but a wave of dizziness washed over her. It had been so long since she had felt well, since she had been able to move enough. She leaned against the rough wall, marveled that after so many weeks it was a different wall than the four she had become accustomed to. Stefan walked ahead of her, checking for other guards.
We do not have time, and you do not have the strength. If you want to get out, we need to leave now. You can go get Juana, then. If I leave you, you will not make it out.
Larda's heart raced in her chest. There had to be another way, a way to escape with Juana.
If I go and pull her out of the kitchens, someone is bound to notice, Stefan said. I cannot keep both of you secret. She would not leave me behind.
Stefan shook his head.
No, she would not.
Larda had to make a decision, and she had to make it now.
She would not leave me behind, but she would tell me to leave her.
If Juana was in the kitchen, she had witnesses and an alibi. No one could hold her accountable for the dead men in the cell. But they could hold her as prisoner forever. Larda was trading her freedom for Juana's. Accepting Stefan's elbow for support, she fled from the prison building and out of Hunedoara, hating herself with each step, hating Matthias more, and hating the world, most of all, for taking the people she cared about and making her choose between them and Valahia every time. Juana had once told her at this very castle that no sacrifice was too great in the cause of their country. Larda prayed that Juana still felt the same, would still feel the same when she discovered their abandonment of her. But another day in that prison might kill Larda, and she would not go back for anything. 40. Snagov Island Monastery.
Tell me again why Aron sent you to an island monastery far from Turgo Viste on a seemingly unimportant task that could have been done by anyone else.
Nazira batted her eyelashes innocently.
Fatima shushed her reproachfully.
Cyprian laughed. Radu sighed. Their ride here had been peaceful, too peaceful. The entire area between Turgo Viste and Snagov was still almost empty. Would the whole country hide in the mountains forever? It made Aron's task of ruling them far more difficult. How could he tax or command a populace he could not find? Radu corrected his sturdy mare's direction,
guiding her back in line with the others. In front and behind were Yanacheris, but it was easy to feel like it was just the four of them. Aron is sending me because Mahmed was not able to take Snagov. Attacking the island was too logistically complicated and not worth the time. We need to make certain that the monks there are loyal to the throne, and also invite one of them to take over the cathedral in Turgoviste. No one has been willing to so far.
Yes, and that entire plan makes perfect sense, but the reasonable course of action would be to send someone to do it other than the man in charge of all the military forces currently in the country.
Nazira shushed Fatima before Fatima could shush her this time.
Cyprian twisted his mouth to the side and drew his eyebrows together. Radu loved every single expression Cyprian's face was capable of, though his genuine smile was still, and always would be, his favorite.
I am inclined to agree with Nazira. Aron is trying to push you to the margins. Decrease your visibility. You are already a threat.
Radu could not deny it. Things had become increasingly tense between himself and the Dinesh brothers. Radu rubbed his forehead, gazing at the dock they were drawing closer to.
Aron has nothing I want. I wish he could see that. Still, we are close to being finished. By the time we return, I should have all my scouts back. It has been over 3 months with no word of Larda. I cannot imagine anything she might plan that would require this much silence and inaction. I suspect something else has happened.
He did not like thinking about what might have ended her aggressions. After everything she had done, he still did not want her to suffer. He only wanted her to fail.
Regardless, I am confident we can move forward very soon.
Forward to where?
Fatima asked.
Radu dismounted and offered a hand to help her off her horse.
Somewhere out of Valahia. I do not know, Cyprian said. This area is quite nice.
He patted his horse and stretched his broad shoulders. Radu quickly looked away and then remembered he did not have to. He let his eyes linger, drinking the other man in. Cyprian caught in staring. His answering smile was sharper than normal, sharper and more devious. The Yanacheris gathered and dismounted as well. Radu had left Kirill in charge in Turgoviste, trusting him to keep an eye on things there. The guards who had accompanied them would cross over to the island with them, in case they encountered any hostility. In an effort to appear non-threatening, Radu had dressed Valahian style. He had left his beloved turban at home and wore a rather absurd hat instead. He wanted to return to flowing robes and beautiful fabrics, leave behind these layers of breeches and vests and coats. Not only were they ugly, they were damnably hot in the heavy summer air. Nazira and Fatima, too, had shifted their dress. They did not look quite Valahian, but they did not look Turkish either. As with everything, Nazira prettified whatever she wore simply by virtue of being in it. Radu suspected she could wear the dirty wool right off a lamb's back and make it look deliberate and fashionable. Fatima's clothes were serviceable and plain. Though Radu told her she did not need to play at being a servant here, she preferred to go unnoticed. Looking like a maid was an easy way to become invisible to anyone who had no use for you. Cyprian, at least, was comfortable in Valahian clothes, as they were similar to styles he had worn in Constantinople. He had stopped wearing the Yanacheri uniform, where Nazira had gotten one for him. Radu did not know, though he suspected somewhere was a Yanacheri still too charmed by her to bother being angry that he was walking about naked. After issuing instructions to the guards, they walked to the rickety dock. It was apparent that the previous dock had been burned and dismantled. The replacement was just a few planks nailed together, but there was a boat waiting. With a queasy lurch, all Radu's thoughts twisted away.
"Oh, a boat! Radu loves boats!" Nazira teased.
Radu climbed gingerly into the back, with Cyprian sitting at his side. Nazira and Fatima took a nearby bench, and the rest of the guards filled in where they could. They helped row, following the increasingly annoyed directions of the Valahian-speaking ferryman.
Radu translated as best he could in between, trying not to vomit. When they reached the island, Radu nearly fell over in his haste to rejoin firm ground. Cyprian leaned close and whispered,
"Perhaps I was wrong. Perhaps the real reason you stayed behind in Constantinople was not out of altruistic duty to my little cousins, but because you knew you could not survive a boat ride."
Radu laughed weakly, and Cyprian joined him. That Cyprian could not only forgive his past, but also find ways to joke about it, was deeply reassuring. It would always be a tender spot, but as a scar, not an open wound. After his stomach had settled, Radu finally took a look at the island. It was tiny, the borders marshy and overgrown. Insects droned, lending the humid and heavy air its own music. Short but dense trees offered the promise of shade, and a path led to carefully tended garden rows. The monastery rose in the distance, pale red stone towers marking its place. Though the guards around them were on high alert, the monk ambling toward them seemed utterly unconcerned by the appearance of this many armed men. "Hello," Radu said. "I am..." He paused, unsure whether Radu Bey or Radu Dracul would get a better reception. He had already dressed the part of Valachian nobility, though. May as well continue to play it. "I am Radu Dracul, here on behalf of Prince Aron Dinesht, Vivode of Valachia." The monk, his face lined and tanned with years of being outdoors, did not smile. But something in the lines around his eyes shifted with amusement. "Prince Aron? I was not aware we had a new one. Or that we needed one." "Yes," Radu smiled, though he did not quite know where he stood with this man. "He sends his greetings and asks that a priest join him in Terguviste to take over the cathedral."
"Hmm. Well, come along with me to the monastery. We can offer you food and rest."
The monk turned back down the path. Radu walked by his side, the others falling in behind.
"Have you been to our island before?" the monk asked. "You seem familiar."
"Not since I was a small boy."
"Ah, yes. I remember now. Your sister told me. Larda has been here. She came last autumn. In fact, look there."
The monk pointed to the spires of the church, nearly finished, with men on ropes clinging to the outside and hammering in shingles.
"She donated the funds for the new building. She has been a good patron to us."
Radu frowned, puzzled. The church was functional and elegant, with dusty stone that would age in beauty the way all churches here did.
"You seem surprised," the monk said.
"I never knew my sister to be particularly concerned with the welfare of her soul."
The monk smiled slyly.
"Are we not all? Besides, as she put it, our church is Valachian, and thus deserves more glory and trappings than other gods."
"Ah, that makes more sense."
If it was done for Valachia in competition with other countries, then Radu could understand Larda's desire to improve the island. In fact, he was surprised she had not made the church much larger and spikier.
"What did you think of her?"
"She is singular. I have never encountered her like, though I have lived the last 20 years on this island and we do not have many visitors. Still, while I was initially skeptical, reports from the countryside indicate that your sister is a leader of remarkable vision and strength."
"Was,"
Radu gently corrected.
"Oh?"
The monk's face twisted playfully.
"Lucia," he called out.
Radu cringed involuntarily, hearing his cruel older brother's name. But Lucia was dead, and his name common. One of the men working on the church turned his head.
"Who is Prince of Valachia?" shouted the monk.
"Larda Dracul, may she spit ever in the faces of the Turks!"
The guards around Radu
shifted uneasily, but none of the workers moved aggressively, or even paid them much mind. "Does he not know a new prince has been crowned?" Radu asked. Maybe people had not returned to their towns because they were unaware. The monk opened the church's doors, the dim interior cool and inviting.
"I think, my son, that he does not care."
Lunch was fish with summer vegetables and rough bread. The monks were polite and kind, patiently disinterested in anything Radu had to say, and even less interested in taking a position in the capital.
"Perhaps check in one of the village churches," the monk that had led him here suggested.
"Everyone is afraid to come to Turgoviste," Radu confessed, staring up at a mural of Christ. "Most are still hiding in the mountains. Those that have come down are much like your man on the roof. They do not care about the new prince. We cannot even begin to collect taxes. We are mostly just praying they plant fields, so we will have a harvest."
"It is a different country now. Your sister offered them change. They will not give it up easily."
"But she is not even here." The monk lifted his hands as though offering evidence.
"She is, though. As long as she is alive, so are the changes she wrought. The gates have been flung open and the sheep have wandered. I suspect this Arone is not up to the task of shepherding them back in."
Radu could not argue with that. He said nothing, and studiously avoided Nazira's pointed look. The monk stood.
"Would you like us to do anything for you before you leave?"
Radu did not want to tell the monk that this religion had nothing he wanted any longer. They were good people, and he wished them all the best in living their faith. But it was only a childhood memory for him. He felt nothing for it, either good or ill. That, he supposed, was a blessing of sorts. It was nice to have something in Valahia that he was neutral toward, something that caused no pain.
"Will you tell me if my sister visits again?"
His own visit had given him the clarity that he was not only fighting his sister, he was fighting the very idea of her, and that was just as, if not more, elusive and difficult to target. Arone was not likely to inspire devotion or encourage a change of loyalties in anyone who had responded to his sister. The monk gazed up at the same mural.
"She did say she enjoyed being here. She found something as close to peace as a creature like her ever can, I think. I hope she will come again. And if she does, she will be welcomed, and none of her enemies will be warned."
The monk looked at Radu, lifting an eyebrow.
"Are you her enemy?"
Though Radu had no attachment to this religion, it was more than he had in him to lie to a man who had devoted his life to God.
"I do not know. I think I might be."
The monk nodded, no reproach in his face.
"You should spend the night. See if you can find some of the peace here as well."
No matter what he did, this country still belonged to Larda. He had never been able to take away something once she claimed it. Not their father, not Mahmed, and now not Valahia.
"Maybe,"
Radu said. But he knew there would be no peace for him here. Larda had seen to that. 41. Town of Arjesh. Larda had been too miserable during their escape to think about much of anything. Stefan had gotten horses somewhere, and it had all been accomplished silently and swiftly. No one looked twice at a man riding next to a hunched-over, shawl-wrapped woman, even if she was dirty and barefoot. Once out of the city, it was all countryside and farmland. Summer had passed its zenith and was slipping from its muggy, warm haze toward autumn. Larda should have been overwhelmed with joy to be outside again, but she found herself aghast and resentful. How dare the seasons change?
How dare nature continue its trek forward when she had been so cruelly stalled? And how dare anything be so soul-nourishingly lovely when she had left behind her nurse in order to save herself? She rejected the beauty of the Hungarian landscape, ignored the vibrant green warmth of Transylvania, and let herself take in only a little relief and happiness when they finally crossed into Valahia. Even in this state, she could not resist loving her country. But she feared what she would find when she got there. Ahead of them loomed the mountains along the Argesh, where she would return to her fortress, to Bogdan, without his mother. Lada did not think Matthias would kill Wana, or at least she hoped he would not. He seemed the type of person to think a servant woman inconsequential enough that he might not have truly noticed her. Besides, Wana had been nowhere near when Lada had escaped. Surely that would be in her favor. Still, Lada had to add one more name to the list of those who were not at her side. Matei, traitor, still missed as her first meaningful Yanicheri loss. Petru, murdered, avenged. Nikolai, died for her, which was perhaps why he haunted her most. Wana, sacrificed, which would doubtless haunt her. And always, ever, the phantom presences at her right and her left, Mahmed and Radu. Someday she would grow old enough that she would no longer care about the two best companions of her childhood. She hoped. Both that she would no longer care and that she would grow old. Neither seemed likely on that dazzling summer afternoon, huddled and hunched in the saddle. Lada was bothered not only by what nature was flagrantly displaying, but also by what it was not. Farmland. They rode through acres and acres of unplanted land. Last fall, this very stretch had provided ample crops. This fall, there would be nothing. Which meant that the coming winter would be far deadlier than the previous spring. The Ottomans could be tricked, defeated, turned away. Starvation was the world's most patient and unrelenting foe. What had she done? How could she fix it? Stefan drew his horse to a stop.
I am not going to Poinar.
Lada sighed. Another name to add to the list of those she had lost. And with him, Darciana. He had warned her. Apparently that time was here.
Are you certain?
He nodded gravely.
My debt to you is fully paid.
Lada lifted an eyebrow. Well, not quite.
Oh?
My debt for freeing you from the Ottomans, yes, but do not forget it was my choice to allow Darciana to remain with our company. If I had refused her, you would still be a shadow of a man, untethered.
Mine. Lada scowled. I should not have let her stay. Stefan rewarded her with the barest of smiles, and she looked away so she would not get emotional. At least this one friend she was losing to life, not death. Lada brushed off her heavy emotions and made her tone befitting that of a prince.
Do one more task for me, and then I will tell you where Darciana is.
What task?
There are usurpers in my castle. Kill Arone and André Danesht. So it is clear that I am the only prince Valahia has or needs. It should not be too difficult for you.
It will be done.
He turned his horse away.
One last favor. Between friends.
Do you not want to know where Darciana is?
Lada called. Stefan looked over his shoulder, and for the first time ever, Lada caught the full power of his smile. She understood what Darciana had seen, and why it might be worth having more than just the military loyalty of such a man.
I would not be a very good spy if I had not already figured it out on my own.
Lada laughed, undone by that smile.
Then why did you stay?
I told you. I am grateful. I wish you well, my prince. It has been an honor.
If Larda were not so weary and ill, she might have been angry at his departure. But the